on the Edge with April Mahoney. You are at the spot, the place, the location where we wet our whistle. Where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today we have Amanda Ahern, and we are going to talk about her release of her book. I'm so excited for her because it's like giving birth. The book is called The Way of the Goddess. She is going to tell us what it is to be a goddess. How was she selected to be a goddess? And what is innately inside of all of us to bring out the goddess? She's an author. She's an artist, a creative life coach, and again, a wisdom goddess. So we're going to see what she has in store for us here on the Edge. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you, April. Such a privilege and a pleasure to be here, and so lovely to spend this time with you. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. You just look like you are so enlightened. Your skin is glowing. Well, really, I mean, your skin is glowing and your eyes are bright and your hair is, you know, salt and pepper. You're a woman of a particular age. You look like you are just living your best life.
Well, I am. I have to be honest. I am living my best life. And I've just returned from India, where I took a group of women to the largest goddess temple in India. It's like the most charged up sacred site of the divine feminine in the world, probably. And I took with my co-facilitator, Sarah Tomlinson, who lives in England, we took 18 women to this really, it's a really wild place. It's in Assam in East India. And it's so powerful. I only got home on late Thursday night. And it's, what is it, Monday morning here. I'm still a little bit, not quite here yet, but, we did fire ceremonies. We did special rituals, which is called Vasani Puja, which is like honoring each woman as a goddess. And it's all about feminine empowerment, April. You know,
so
let the girls see how gorgeous they are.
Tell me a little bit about you. Let's dial back before you became a goddess. Who was Amanda Ahern?
Well, I've grown up in an Irish Catholic family in Brisbane in Australia. I'm the eldest of seven children. I have five brothers, so you can imagine that was a shit show. And I looked around when I was 8 years old and I went, I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to be a housewife. I'm never going to have a station wagon and kids and the dog, although I do have a dog. I just somehow thought, no, this is not my destiny. At 8 years old, I knew that. So all I wanted to do was travel. And Mum had a friend who used to come and she had a charm bracelet and each charm was from a place she'd been. And I was completely enchanted by that charm bracelet. Mm. And I told the Eiffel Tower and, you know, the all little trinkets from all over the world. And I thought, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to travel the world. And I have.
Wow, that's amazing. How did you realize that you were a goddess or that you had the ability to help others find out who they really need to be?
Well, I never really realized I was a goddess. Well, let's just dial it back. I'm working on the active potential of being a goddess and honoring the goddess in me every day and inspiring other women to do the same. Because I had that background of growing up with all those men, I felt because I felt like a bit of a second class citizen, that I was really there to serve them. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, Brisbane in Australia, it's a colonial outpost in the 1950s, 1960s. And I just thought, oh, this is, you know, I just accepted it. But then as I grew up and traveled and everything, it was like a deep imprint I had, but I wasn't happy about it. Mm. And I've done a lot of personal growth. I'm a Hoffman process facilitator. I've done, you know, therapy and You know, Eastern philosophy and Western psychology my whole life since I was in an ashram when I was in my 20s in India. And it wasn't until about 10 years ago I was attending a sacred art course where I was learning to paint these yatras, these images behind me. I was learning to paint them at a workshop in India in a place called Johari House in Haridwar, which is up in the north near Rishikesh. And we visited this goddess temple there. Well, actually, it wasn't so much a goddess temple. It was called Dux Mandir. It's a sacred site where the myth of the divine feminine basically went up in flames. And like the revering of the divine feminine. And when I'm talking about the divine feminine, I'm talking about femininity as a principle, as an energy in life, not a gender. So the feminine energy is active, creative, dynamic, resourceful, spacious, generous, all that kind of, it's the active energy of the universe, whereas the masculine principle is like the stillness and the holding. And without the feminine, absolutely nothing happens in this world.
Yeah, well, you're speaking my language, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, like, take me to a T. So tell us a little bit more about the sign and symbols, what they mean, and how to connect with those, the ones that are on your wall.
Well, these are yantras, and yantras are geographic representations of particular flavors of the goddess. And they activate when you draw them and color them, or just color them in. What you're doing is you're actually activating the subtle body of the goddess that is in you. Because all these entities, I suppose you can call them entities.
Karen Flanner, Pia.
Sorry.
That's all right.
They're psycho-spiritual forces that are in the world, but they're also in you. And so when you draw or paint these yantras, and also in my book I have one for each goddess, that I have in the book, they activate the subtle body of the goddess in you, which means it's like you're cultivating the energy of that particular flavor of divinity, that spark of the divine that's in you.
Wow. Where's
yeah.
that originally from?
Well.
That's originally from India?
From India, yes. Okay. And so in my book I have, and each yantra has a mantra as well, because the goddess has a mantra and a yantra. In my book, I've just given the seed mantras, which are like the seed of the goddess. So when you recite it, for example, this one here, the green one on the end, that's Kamala Devi, and she's the 10th of the Mahavidyas, who are the wisdom goddesses, and although they say the 10 great cosmic powers, and that's Kamala, and she's the energy of fulfillment and abundance and beauty in life. So it's all that it's good that happens in life, but it's like the absolute ecstatic fulfillment of everything that of your heart's desire.
So when you're engaging, are you in a spiritual like mindset? Are you asking something to be uncovered or discovered? You're using certain colors, certain energies. Is what you're being drawn to at that time. So is this kind of like a spiritual practice as well?
It's totally a spiritual practice. And all the colors are very prescriptive. And you always start, like, there's rules, right? So you start from the outside and then you work in. So I'll just show you, for example, this one. You see,
oh,
there's like
beautiful.
A gold. This is Ma Kali. I'll tell you about her in a minute.
Okay.
This is the gold, and then yellow, then the blue, and you journey from the outside to the inside until you end up here in the bindu.
Oh.
We call that the bindu, which is the dot in the center. So it's about being in the center of your being, ultimately, and each of these goddesses is a pathway to do that.
Okay, that is very interesting. I just learned something. I knew nothing about that. So now you currently have a program that you're working with individuals. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'll just tell you a little bit how I created the book.
Okay.
Because feminine doesn't do anything in isolation. I mean, let's face it, women get together, they talk, they share things. And I just watched this beautiful little clip from, I don't know whether it was on YouTube or something like that, somebody sent saying, with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin. And Jane Fonda was saying, without my women, I am because I have my women friends. I exist because of my women friends. And so when I was doing this book, and I feel like that's really true for me. I don't know if that's true for you, but let's face it, without the sisterhood, life would be very dull.
But you know, a lot of times we have to still work very hard as women to find a cohesiveness, and that this is not the crab in the barrel type syndrome. We're trying to pull someone down. We really need to open ourselves up, not be envious, not be jealous, but be loving, one love, understand the plight, the struggle of other women, no matter what color they are, no matter what age they are, no matter what weight they are, is to come and create a united force. Do you know that we can be unstoppable?
Look, we are unstoppable.
Countries that are run around the world by that female energy. We are the givers of life. We are the portal.
Oh, absolutely. And all these goddesses are different locks to that portal.
You know, and I was thinking when you were talking about that, I was thinking a lot about mandalas. A girlfriend of mine had me paint a mandala, and I really didn't understand at first. I didn't get it. I'm like, how does this work? How does this make me feel? But when I was finished, I felt like it was a part of my soul.
Well, totally.
It was, I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is just another art project. No, it was really, you know, the music that we played, we were all together, the energy, the prayers that we have, it's a whole process, brains. So in writing the book, you had to go deep. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, I started a group of friends. I invited some of my yoga community, and there are about six or eight of us. And we studied a book by a wonderful woman and teacher who passed on last year, Sally Kempton, and her book was called Awakening Shakti. So we went through that book together. We studied it together. Like, we'd read a chapter, then we'd come together every week and we'd talk about it and discuss what it meant to us. And then also we practiced the mantra for each of those goddesses. And then we talked about what happened as a result of practicing it. And then also we painted all these yantras. You know, I did a Zoom class. Some people came to my house, some of them, ones who lived a bit further away, we did it on Zoom. So it was a joint project. I didn't do it on my own. It's actually the collection of everybody's experience and stories from that group. And we grew really close. We supported each other. Things really opened up. Things changed. Like in that 2 years that we did that, and we used Sally Kempton's book, we used another book by William Ashley Farron, called Shakti Mantras, and then a couple of other books about the Mahavidyas. And we did self-study, then we came back and reported on it. And that's what I wrote about. Also, I did it as well. Plus, I had other experiences that I peppered in there. So that was the support that was backing me to do it. So I got all the download of all that. And then I had to write about it. So at the time I was building a house in my backyard. So all the builders would be there all day, I'd make them lunch, do all that. They'd leave at 3:30 in the afternoon, I'd have a shower, then I'd just sit at my desk for an hour and a half. And I do a mantra to the goddess Matungi, who is the goddess of writing and creativity and wisdom. And she opens up that capacity in you that is able to take quite esoteric information and make it completely digestible and understandable for the layperson. So I do my mantra, my Matungi, and I was doing that as a sadhana, which is a practice, like a daily practice, reciting the mantra like a mala. This is a mala. It has 108 beads on it. So I'd recite that mantra 108 times, and then I'd sit at my desk.
108 times daily?
Yeah.
Okay, and then, and people here would call it like a chant.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And so mantras. What does that do for the soul? What does that do for
the person? What it does, actually, it opens, it's based in phonemic intelligence. I mean, the yogis knew all this 5,000 years ago, you know, science now is like, oh, look what we've discovered. Well, guess what? It's old news. It's been going, you know, people have been for thousands of years. Like, get over yourself, guys. You know, the yogis intuited this through deep meditative states, that when you recite certain sounds in certain ways, it opens up centers in the brain, which then open up other centers in the body, you see, or they work on the chakras. And each of the letters of the Sanskrit alphabet, there are 51 of them, they consider each one of them, each sound, to be a goddess in her own right.
Wow.
The sound is the goddess. So when you're chanting these mantras, they're very powerful, and they open your energy to that sound, especially when you're chanting it. It's like you are that while you're chanting it. So it's very uplifting. It's very nourishing. It actually creates quite a lot of change. Like, for example, before I was talking about Kali, that's this one. Kali is the goddess of transformation. Kali is also a pretty wild girl. Doesn't take any shit from anybody. Has, you know, a big red tongue. In fact, Mick Jagger's tour, you know, that one with the tongue hanging out, that originally came from Kali, the goddess of transformation. And she is often depicted with a mala of skulls, and that represents the egos that she's taken. So it's like, it's about, you know, when you go through a time, like, you know, you break up with your boyfriend, you lose your job, you have a car crash and your dog dies, sort of thing. They're Kali times. Of, you know, they're times of like cataclysmic change. And sometimes if you're feeling really, it's not always that drastic, but sometimes if you're feeling very stuck and you do the Kali mantra, things just move right along relatively quickly. Like you get a big insight about something. Like I did the Kali yantra. I painted the Kali yantra with a friend here at home one Sunday. On the Monday, and I finished it, I did a big one. And I finished it. And on the Monday, a client, I missed a client call. I was late for the client call. And the woman was a GP in Canberra. And she was like, really, she hauled me over the coals, like very angry. And I said, you know, you're absolutely right. And I'm deeply sorry. I'll get someone else to talk to you. You know, you obviously don't think I'm worthy of your time. So I arranged that. But then I realized that I was taking on too much. I couldn't do all the calls and do the book and build a house. I was overfunctioning. So I rang the office and I said, for the, you know, the Hoffman process, and I said, look, this has happened. Please assign someone else to her. I've apologized. I've done everything, but I'm going to not do any of these calls for the next 6 months because I need to focus on my book.
Wow.
So that shift, like that was literally overnight. So they're tools for change. They're tools for change.
Now, you know, I'm going to tell you a story. And again, I totally am enamored by what you're saying. But some also can consider this a form of brainwash. I'm just being out. I have a girlfriend that lives here. And she has just now, after 33 years, set herself free from a guru. She go into massive transformational meditations for 3-4 hours straight. And she felt that her neuro-linguistic programming was changing. Her mindset was changing. She was, now it was extreme. You know, there was different issues with food and water and environment and people. I don't know if it was a control type of thing, but it was very scary. So when people hear the word guru, they don't look at it or perceive it in some situations as of God, but more of a different type of energy force. What do you say to that person?
Well, you know, I've had gurus my whole, since I've been in my 20s, and guru actually means, guru is the dispeller of darkness. That's what it really means.
That's what I'm saying. I don't, you know.
It means the dispeller of darkness. And that guru is actually in you. It's your own capacity to dispel your own darkness. But often we need to be around someone who's further along the path, who has more skills in that area, who can help us become better at dispelling our own darkness. That's it. And often people, you know, you say brainwashing, go back to the brainwashing.
Well, and I say that.
Tell you, our brains are dirty. They're full of negative messages from our parents.
Well, what I'm saying is, I want people to understand that I'm not just picking on this. Any sort of, in my opinion, indoctrinated religion, psychology, philosophy is a washing of the brain. It is a programming. Religion was developed, in my opinion, to keep people under control. You don't do this. If you do this, you know, you dress a certain way, you eat a certain way, you pray a certain way, you think a certain way, you have to go, you know, like ducks in a row. Any deviation from that, you're shunned, you're disallowed, you're not allowed to be a critical free thinker. You go by this book or this doctrine that has been interpreted, you know, 5 million times by 5 million different people. So it's hard for people to grab hold to this and really, I don't want to say take it seriously. They do take it seriously, but with an air of skepticism.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is what I really love about this work, is especially the Mahavidyas, which is the theme of my next book, which is based on, you know, that temple we just went to in India. And the Maha means ultimate and Vidya means liberation. And really what it is liberation from your conditioned state. So that you are living as a free spirit with an open heart and an open mind and generating more love and light in the world. That's really what it's about. And the goddesses, they say, can be, especially the Mahavidyas, can be very inconvenient. You know, they confront you with things that you don't want to see about yourself sometimes, well, oftentimes. Things change, but those energies are really there to support you to lean back more into who you really are, not who you've been programmed to be. And there's nothing wrong with being programmed to be a certain way. It's just good to know that it's programming.
Right. It's good to know that it is, right.
Well, just see it for what it is, and that's okay. And if you're happy with that, that's totally fine. For me, I wasn't happy with that. Some parts of it I'm happy with. But other parts, I just feel like, oh, there's got to be more to life. I'm a bit, I suppose I'm a bit greedy in my aspirations because of my time in India when I was very young. I lived in an ashram in my 20s in India with a guru, the sex scandal guru, Rajneesh. And I learned so much from him that he was a very wise man. He was a speed reader. He had the third largest private library in the world. He was an amazing orator, gave incredible talks every day, got a very good education on Eastern philosophy. And in fact, what really woke me up and opened me up to him was his talks on Jesus, because I'm a Catholic, right? And he was talking about Jesus, and he was talking about the teachings of Jesus, the to thine own self be true. And usually I'd be sitting at the back of the hall because I wasn't initiated. So and he was a very powerful speaker, and I'd sort of like go into a bit of a trance, I suppose, and not quite asleep, but not quite awake either, but I was just absorbing it all. And he started talking about Jesus, and I sat up. Something in me just sat up, and he said, when you're born, everybody's born with a lifeline. And that's your job in life, is actually to follow that life, that path. That's it. That's your only, really, your only real job in life. And no one else can fit on that line. Not your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters, your lover, your husband, your children, your best friend. No one. That's totally your path. And you have to own it and claim it and follow it. That's your job. And something in me just went, wow, okay. I'd never thought about the teachings of Jesus in that way before. I mean, I'd never thought about them at all, quite honestly. I was just programmed to go to church. And as soon as I finished school, I stopped going because I thought, what's the point? Because I didn't really feel like the teachings were really explained in a way that I could relate to.
Mm-hmm.
But Bhagwan actually explained them in a way that I could totally embrace them. So that was the guru shedding light on the darkness of my ignorance, right?
Right.
So I found that incredibly helpful. And it's really about what you do with your relationship with somebody, because guru really is teacher. Any, like, you're a guru, I'm a guru, you know what I mean? Like, we teach people things. It's like, but it's how people take it. And often people go into transference to someone, a powerful figure, and they, they project their parents onto them, their need for mummy or daddy or whatever. And then it turns into they have an internal conflict and, they have to work stuff out. And I probably had that when I was there, but I think I worked it out pretty quickly. I mean, I knew one day I just woke up and I went, oh, I've learned what I need to learn. It's time to move on. And I did.
That's
And I
amazing.
was living that
Well,
thing.
you have created this book. You are an author, you are a speaker, you are a teacher, and you are a goddess. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you. I'd love for them to, work with you, possibly go on a retreat with you, and purchase a copy of the book.
Well, I also am starting a practice group in May where people work, get a copy of the book and we work through it together. Like every week we read the story and then we practice just like I did in creating the book. And there's in the book, there's also journal pages and things like that. So you make notes and it's a bit of a journey. If you're looking for a shift, you know, if you want to change something in your life, if you feel like you need more honoring of yourself, more, like if you feel like you've got issues with unworthiness and things like that, then the goddess Lakshmi is really helpful. If you want to change something, Kali's useful. If you want to like dig deep and, create something new, then Varahi's the one to go to, or Bhuvaneshwari is the goddess of space to hold space for people. You know, like there's all kinds of things. It depends what you need. So that group is, over 3 months because there's 12 goddesses. We just have a Zoom call. It'll probably be on a Sunday night, Monday morning in Australia. For America, it'll be Sunday night. And it goes for about an hour, but you connect with other women. And also, if people want to get their own group together to go through the book with a group of friends, that's a really great way to have some, to like deepen your connection with each other, to, go on a personal development journey. Self-discovery, a journey of self-discovery, and discover yourself that, really, who is the goddess? I'll tell you, there's a really great quote in my book. The goddess is, one sec, I can't remember, I want to say it correctly. And this was by Dr. Pillai, who's a Tamil Siddha in South India. And who is the goddess? The goddess is the super intelligent, super loving, wise energy of the universe living as you.
So, brains, you no longer have to live the imposter syndrome. You need to really find out who you are and who you're meant to be. It's an ever-evolving evolution, metamorphosis of change. Every day, every minute, every breath. You have a responsibility and an obligation to find out who it is and what your journey and destination is. We're here for two purposes. One is to learn, the other is to teach. Everything else is superficial. We can't take it with us. We need to prepare ourselves, our hearts, our family, and our souls for what is going to evolve next, whether you believe it or not. I don't think that this is the end, dot, period. I think that there's a comma, there is an exclamation point, there are question marks. And Amanda is there to help you discover that. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you.
Well, I have a website, www.amandaahern.com. That's AmandaAhern.com. All the information is there. All my contacts and everything are on the website. And I have an Instagram account and a Facebook page, but it's probably just better to go to the website, and they're all on the website anyway.
Brains, she's just a point and a click away. Please go in and do your due diligence. As I always say, you don't know what you don't know. So go in and do some exploration. I like for you to love, like, share, and subscribe right here. Love, like, share, and subscribe on the Edge with April Mahoney. Thank you so much, Amanda. You have been such a gift to us. Namaste.
Thank you. You're a gift to us, April. Much appreciated. Sharing the love. I love it.
Bye-bye.